the biggest mistakes of the athletes is that they push too much to failure. And that going to failure is the worst thing that you can do.
Yo, gorillas, welcome to the Athlete Insider podcast by Your Nation. My name is Phil, and today's guest is an Italian calisthenics coach, somebody with over 10 years of experience in gymnastics, in mobility. I'm happy to welcome you from Italy, Alessandro Magnente.
Thank you, Philip. The pronunciation was perfect.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm always for the name. I'm always, hopefully I pronounce it right. Yeah, I'm really happy that you're here. Jack Vinati connected us. You're his coach, which already means a lot. If you didn't see the episode, we interviewed Jack Vinati, who is 2 meters, 2 centimeters, and 103 kg heavy. And Alessandro is the man who lifted up his legs, who enabled him, of course, with hard work from Jack, but who helped him to achieve this incredible goal. So yeah, I'm really happy to welcome you. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you for the opportunity.
So yeah, let's kick off. Who are you? What do you do? Do you want to pretty quickly present yourself?
Well, my history is a little bit strange because I've played football or soccer. Maybe soccer is the good word for a lot of time. Then I have torn my ACL, so a ligament of my right knee. And after, I have decided to put my effort in something that basically does not use the lower limbs, so upper body work. So everything started with gymnastics as a play, as a game. And with the time, I started to like gymnastics a bit more. But for sure, the main problem was my age. I was too old to perform on some apparatus, like for example, vault or advanced skills on the floor or on the P-bars. So I focused for the most on upper body strength. So on the P-bars, on the floor, on the rings. And with the time, I passed on the opposite side. So I started to coach gymnastics, both with the young kids and the young girls. So basically doing a physical preparation, both for men and both for women. And in the same period, I met Coach Summer. Maybe you know who is Coach Summer. Christopher Summer, he's the owner of Gymnastic Bodies. And I think that he was a pioneer because he moved the knowledge of the bodyweight training outside from the gymnastic gym. And I think that he was the first because he began around something like 2008. So not 1 or 2, 3 years ago, more than 10 years ago. And I followed him into his seminar from 2011. In the same period, I spent basically my work on study and listening other strength trainer like Tuscherer or Verkozansky or Zatryowski or Ear King. You can see my background. I can say 100 names, but the most important thing is that all of them are person who share principle. Okay. So if you take a program that works, basically it share the same ideas, the same logic of another program that works too. And with the time, what you can do is refine your knowledge about programming with some experiment for sure, because for me, Jack Vinati was an experiment. And with the time, I had the opportunity to improve my ideas of training, especially by training not me, training other people. Because everyone basically has its own story and it responds different from another person. So if you can train 100 people and after I take you as a student, probably you can fall into this group of 100 people because they are all different. If I use the same logic that I used for me 10 years ago, probably I can train only a people like me, a person like me. And for me, this is the real idea of becoming a good coach. Working with many different persons, as much different as possible. So I had really tons of students. I have many results. You can check on my Instagram profile. I had students with iron cross, Maltese, reverse muscle up, one-arm pull-up with 15 kilograms at the weight of 60 kilograms. So Vinati and so on. So my profile is public, you can see. So for me, coaching is really funny for me, because it's finding the good strategy for every single athlete and understanding what work best for someone and what doesn't work for another one, and fitting experience, fittings, my notes, and finding strategy. This is what for me is coaching.
I really like the word experiment that you said with that Jack was an experiment, because I can imagine that being a coach is always like the first phase is, I guess, analysis, understanding the person's physique, the person's goals, and then to try out different things and see how they react with their body, right? Yes.
Of course. Every type of experiment should be done with logic. Uh-huh. So you have to put together some ideas and think about what I can produce with those ideas. Because if there is no logic, what you can expect? You can expect that maybe something happens, but is not dependent on my ideas, because it can be casual, not causal. Okay, uh-huh. So there is a bit of different. So experiment is good, but with logic.
Okay. So let's get into calisthenics. Tell us, how did you get into this sport? Maybe it also plays together with the fact that you were too old for gymnastics back in the days. And I often hear calisthenics athletes saying that the main difference between calisthenics and gymnastics for them is that calisthenics you can start at every age, and gymnastics there is like you have to start early. This is like what a lot of calisthenics athletes say. But maybe you can share your opinion about the difference between gymnastics and calisthenics.
Well, it depends on what are your goals. Because if you want to perform like Yuri Keki or Kohei Uchimura, you should start when you are very young, because there are a lot of skills, especially skills with an high technical component. And you need to start when you are young, because you have a very big number of skills on 6 apparatus. You cannot train 24 hours in a day, because at the beginning you need to adapt to an higher volume, time over time, little by little. And only maybe when you are 16 or 15, you can train 6 days a week. So, if you want to perform on high level technical skills, you need to begin gymnastics when you are young. That's for sure. 5 or 6 years old. But if you want to specialize on strength training, there's not a real age. Of course, you need to take into account that as you start when you are old, maybe 40, maybe 45, you need to consider that how your body responds to strength training in the sense of physical adaptations is different compared in a case where you begin when you are 20. So there is a different anabolic response. There is a different hormone response. And this for sure is linked to how much time you need to recover. And if you need more time to recover, you have less time to train. or you needed to wait more time. So if you begin when you are not young, you need to manipulate different parameters so that you can still train often and you can still train harder, but you can for sure obtain some results. I think that Jack is one of all the cases. So I think basically the difference is this: what are your goals? If you want to perform a triple back or a double back with the two full twist, you need to start 1 year young. If you want to perform a full planche, you can begin when you have when you have 40 years old. When you are 40 years old, one of my oldest client has 50 years old, and he's 50 and he can perform the straddle planche, front lever. We are working on the one arm pull up. So you should consider all these things, how the people is going to respond, how if the person has some injury, or maybe in the past there were some injuries, and you can fit all of this problem with his life. So how many hours he's working? 8 hours, 7 hours, 6 hours? What's the type of work? He's standing, he's working, he is sitting on the computer, he's working with the upper arm, because everything counts.
Well, interesting. You talked about manipulating parameters. I think one parameter that directly jumps into my head is the training intensity. So the RPE, I think, is like one important factor. What else is there? Or maybe you want to also say something about the intensity of the workout?
Well, I do not use the RPE.
Okay.
Okay. So I think that we can consider the RPE in three cases. So we have beginner, we have intermediate, and we have advanced athletes. The problem with beginner is that they basically, their brain is ignorant. So they think they are training at 90% of intensity, but that's not 90%, because their brain ideally can be activated only for the 30%. So RPE is not useful, because I can tell you perform the top single and RPE 9, but maybe for the beginner, this is not RPE 9, it's 8, maybe 7. Okay, if we are lucky. So the opposite problem comes in the case of advanced athletes. Why? Because they tend to push too much, and they tend to overdo, and this is not good, because they can accumulate too much fatigue, and they cannot recover. So the intermediate maybe can use the RPE, but I'm not a big fan of it. I prefer other ways, like for example using a buffer, or so that basically I'm sure that all the repetitions or all the second are good or almost good. Okay. The RPE can be very good if you work with the weights. So weighted pull up or weighted dip. And in this way, you can find, for example, the top single and then perform some back off work, or you can find the 3RM and perform a back off work. But I'm not a big fan of it. So I've built, for example, Jack without using the RPE. Or another of my strongest students, Francesco Castellini. Now he's able to perform 30-second full planche and rings and one arm pull up with 15 kilograms. Or if you want to try 8 one arm pull up down like this way. So fast, 1 second in the top, 3 seconds down. Okay, and I have never used RPE. If you have a good idea, a good logic about the program you are going to write, you don't need to use the RPE. You're not forcing. You can, for sure. is an option. Why not?
Yeah, get it. So maybe you want to start sharing a little, what are the, if not RP, what are the things that you work with? What are the parameters that are useful and that you work to achieve these goals with your athletes?
Okay, from my point of view, the biggest mistakes of the athletes is that they push too much to failure. And that going to failure is the worst thing that you can do. There are a very good number of motivation. For example, the first one is that the technique is going to fail. So if the body becomes bad, the brain becomes better, improving the technique, what happens if my technique is going to be bad? What I'm learning? I'm learning a different exercise. So if my goal is performing a good planche with a hollow position, and then I perform the planche to failure, I'm going to lose my protection. So I'm learning the planche with arched back. This is not good. Okay, so I'm teaching to my brain to learn good thing and bad thing in the same moment. So what the brain is going to learn? Not the first, not the second, something in the middle, but not the best. Okay, one second problem is that with calisthenics, basically we are working on maximal strength and sub-maximal strength. And we need to think that the fibers that produce the biggest part of the effort are the fast twitch fiber, which are type 2X. And if we train to failure, we are going to shift those fiber to the type 2A, which are not made to produce big effort. And this is what's happened with bodybuilders. Bodybuilders are bigger. They tend to have type 2A fibers, but they are not as strong as the weightlifter. Weightlifter does not train to failure. So another good thing about don't train to failure is that if you have some buffer, so maybe you train, you have to perform, you can perform at the max, I can say 6 reps. If you train with 2 reps or 3 reps, you have the possibility to reproduce this training session more time in the week, because buffer can reduce the fatigue. If you can reduce the fatigue, your brain, your central nervous system can recover, and you can train with the same intensity, with the same volume, more time during the week. If our ability to improve an element depends on the how many times we can reproduce this movement correctly, if we can train more without injury, we can learn faster. So the idea is train smarter, train better, not more. Okay, so if you ask Jack Vinati, and not also Jack, the first impression that my athletes have is that, wow, I don't feel the training session. It was easy. But that's a goal, because if the session is too much, too hard, you are accumulating too much fatigue. Okay. Another idea I can give to you is that, for example, if the speed of your repetition is going to slow down too much, you are losing the benefit of the speed of the movement. For example, I don't remember if it was 2016 or 15. It was made a study where there were two groups, and basically with the same intensity, they did different training session, one to failure, the other one while holding the same speed of the movement, all almost the same. So basically, one group with more repetition, for sure, closing to failure, maybe six on eight repetition. The other one less repetition, something like 3 or 4 on a maximum of 8 repetition. And the first group, the one who trained closer to the failure, they were bigger, but less strong. The other one, the group who trained with less repetition, but more speed, they were stronger. So the speed of the movement is still something for me that is very undervalued, but is really, really very, very important. So I prefer, for example, slow eccentric, faster concentric, always. Okay. So the idea is train with buffer so that you can train more. This is all.
Well, I think you can already
I hope that you really can understand one of them or what I said. It's in English. For me, it's not easy, but I think that it was clear.
I think it's super clear. Really, it's sharing this is really eye-opening. I think, I hear. It's really funny, you know, like just to see these calisthenics athletes, how they split, how the opinions are separated in this topic, because the ones are like really 100% in every session. I have to be completely empty. I don't have to a good session is only when I'm not able to hold any move at the end anymore. And then there is the other part, with your opinion, with slowing down the intensity, training more often, avoiding fatigue, avoiding soreness, I guess, as well. So really just being able to work out more often at a lower intensity.
Yes. It's not always a matter of intensity, because if I program, so in a way where in a week you have to train at 90% of the intensity, you train all the days 90% of the intensity. But you can do that only if you have some rep reserve, because in this way the fatigue is less. So moving down the intensity is something that you can do in a specific moment, but it's not always the best idea. For example, when I need to teach the one arm pull up, or coaching someone on the one arm pull up, I use it to program with, for example, elastic band or a pulley system where you can set up some weight and basically take off some weight from your body weight and move from lower intensity to higher intensity in a time of 10 to 12 weeks. So it's a long process. When you are at low intensity, you can play with all the intensities of this range. So something in between 80% and 70%. But when you move in a range where you are training with 90%, 85%, 80%. It's not a good way to move the intensity too much down, because you are losing the feeling with the weight. Okay. So there is a phase where you can do some, you can play with intensity, with low intensity. But when you move to high intensity, it's better holding high intensity. Okay, you can still push, for sure. But if you push, you need to deload often. Okay, so with more frequency. That's the only way. Okay, there is a good test that you can do if the strategy of an athlete is good, is observing if he is improving constantly. I'm not saying with a linear, okay, in a linear way. Maybe there are some fluctuations, some waves, but if you connect all the high peak of every wave, you are going to see a line that's not horizontal, it's a little bit inclined. if you see an athlete and basically his form, his performance are doing something like that, basically there is something in the training problem, or in the long term and also in the medium terms, that does not work. So I decide to train in some way because I want to see a linear progression. So constant improvement, month over month, but usually is cycle over cycle. Because for example, Konjac, a cycle of training for the one arm pull up is composed of 12 weeks. So I can see the big difference in terms of improvement from the first day, 3 months later. And maybe the progress from month to month is only 0.5 kilograms, but maybe at the end of the month, of 3 months, he has improvement, the improved the 1 RM, maybe 5 kilograms or 6 kilograms. So this is the idea.
Okay. Yeah, I really like how you go into depth with your explanations, etc. Let's say we have somebody, the listener, he is stuck with his tuck planche. He's like not progressing. He's working out regularly on the tuck planche, but he's not achieving the straddle planche. In general, like somebody with this fitness level, how do we start programming for him? How would you start as a coach? What would be your advice to him to start creating like a program for him to achieve his goal of the straddle planche?
Okay, so when someone contacts me or sends me an email, I'm used to ask, show me how you can perform the planche. So the main problem is technical. So if you cannot pass into the straddle planche and you are performing the planche like that, or you have pain in the forearms, is because you are not using your shoulder. Okay. So basically, when you are feeling pain in the forearms, is because your forearms are trying to compensate for the fact that you are not using the shoulder. Okay. And if you are performing the planche and you are experiencing pain in the shoulder, is because you are not using the anterior deltoid, but you are using accessory muscles, like for example the long head bicep. But the long head bicep can maybe assist the shoulder flexion, that basically is what you do for the planche, for only the 4% of the entire range of motion. And maybe you can use the supraspinatus, but those muscles are not big. They cannot support the body and they can injure faster. So the first thing, the most important, is evaluating the technique. I want to see if you are good in the posture, if you are good in the shoulder blade activation. So you should be able to press without losing the depression. Okay. And the same things is good and valid for the one arm pull up. If you are unable to depress and pulling without losing, you are going to use your bicep and you are going to injure yourself on the middle part of the elbow. So technique first. If technique is bad, we need to find a progression where technique is good. So maybe we can regress. For sure, for some people it's not good. They think I have to regress, but it's not my problem. You've asked me how I can help you. So if the problem is little, so if the difference between perfect execution and your execution is little, we can scale down the intensity maybe of the new progression, so that you can activate your lats, you can depress, and then you can use your shoulder. Okay. So when we have find the when we can find the good progression, later we can adjust the programming. So basically, I'm going to ask you perform your best, and then basing on your best, I can choose the correct number of seconds and sets. My suggestion is working something like in between the 50 and the 60% of your maximal seconds. So if you can do straddle planche for 10 seconds, you can work something lying in between 5 or 6 seconds. So for example, in a three weeks cycle, you can begin working with the 6 sets of 5 seconds and maybe do this for 2 times in a week. Then on the next week, you can move from 6 sets of 5 seconds to 5 sets of 6 seconds. So we are holding the same amount of total seconds, but we are increasing the number of seconds. So we are reducing the buffer. Okay. And then in the last week, I'm not sure if I can increase the seconds because I reached to fall in the 7 seconds range. That is not the best idea. So it's better moving from 5 sets of 6 seconds to 6 sets of 6 seconds. And then in the 4th week, I can perform a little deload that basically means cutting off the sets, nothing more. And then in the last days of the week, you can perform a test. And for sure, the maximum number of seconds is improved. This is the basic idea of the fundamental exercise progression. Then you can insert exercise that can help the big exercise, the first one, the fundamentals, with some dynamic work that basically can stop in a dynamic range on the isometric position, but you don't spend too much time in this position because you need to take off some specificity. Okay, so you can push a bit more, but without the same stress of the fundamental exercise. And all the accessory exercises are done with a lower intensity. Okay. So, for example, if you are doing planche presses, okay, and you are working at 85% with triples or double, you can perform as accessory exercise enough press. So, from the support position, move up into the planche and move down, but not at 85%, maybe 80% or 75%. So lower intensity, and you can push more repetition. Okay. So this is an idea for the planche. So begin with some buffer, increase repetition or seconds, if you can, in a specific range that usually is the half of the maximum number of seconds or the 60%. If you need, increase 1 set. And then on the 4th week, deload. This is basically what Jack is doing. I push a bit more on 3 weeks, but I deload on the 4th. Always. And there are some people that maybe say, you are trying and testing the 1RM or the maximum number of seconds every 3 weeks. Yes, it is only a test. It's 1 set, nothing more. If you make some sets and use them to move closer to your best, and then you sum the intensities of all sets, and then you divide for the number of sets, the average intensity is not more than 80%. So simply you are recalling the exercise, a good intensity, and you are not injuring yourself. That's for sure. I don't have athletes with injury. So
no tendonitis.
No. I think that Francesco Castellini, he is the guy who is able to perform one arm pull up with 15 kilograms. He is training one arm pull up 4 times in a week.
Wow.
Okay, since 8 months ago, no tendonitis. So planche push up, rings planche, he is able to perform the elevator, the reverse muscle ups. No problem at the elbows, no problem at the shoulders. So planning is the key. Of course, you need to adjust to what is necessary. So if your athlete is telling to you, I feel a bit sore, I feel that I have too much fatigue. Okay, we can take off one rep. Okay, so there is always the time to add something more. But if you reach the point where it's too late, there is no time to take off. That's the problem. And if you reach this point, it's not a matter of if I'm going to injure myself. It's only a matter of when. Soon or after. Later.
Okay, so if we jump into one training of a statics move, you just said 4 or 5 exercises, 4 or 5 sets each. Is this like a typical training day for to learn static moves?
Well, usually I plan one exercise or two for a specific goal. So, for example, in a Microsoft microcycle, I mean, 1 week in a week, we have 3 sessions for a planche. And in 2 sessions, usually, or maybe also all the session, you are going to work on the specific isometric position or in the exercise where you want to improve. And then there are some accessory work. So one fundamental exercise all on all the 3 days. So isometric on Monday, on Wednesday, and Friday. And then maybe on Wednesday, that's the light day, I can put some dynamics or I can put some specific core work. For example, Jack, I remember, has some limitation on lifting the legs. So maybe he is a little bit weak in the glutes. So I can add the exercise for this part. And if you have maybe some spot for some more sets, I can add some front rises with the loop band, for example. Or I can put something more general, like, for example, understand the push-up with the full range of motion. So there is always a spot for specific exercises, always. Then you can add something more, but no more than 2 exercises for the same goal. Never. Also, for example, for the one arm pull up, you can have 4 sessions. And if I do 4 specific sessions, I don't have too much necessity of adding more. Maybe if I have imbalances or if I need some more strength in a specific part. For example, if I see that after the depression of the one arm pull up, this part is very explosive, but this part not always very good. Maybe I can perform some depression for sure. Or for the one arm pull up, I can add some archer. Okay. The idea is inserting the exercise with some logic. They should be similar to the fundamental exercise, but not too much. So one arm pull up, then archer is good. Or rope climbing, or simulating the rope climbing. So doing pull up along this way. Or one arm body row, or one arm bicep curl. Okay, always body weight training. I don't use weight with my athletes. I'm not used to. They can be used if you want to make your session a little bit more funny. but not for a specific goal. If you want to have numbers, all of my athletes do not perform more than something like in between 12 and 20 set in a training session. So 12, 20. Uh-huh. That's not too much, I understand, but it's not important how much you do. If what you do sucks, it's not useful. You need to perform a good quality work with good speed, with good schema, with good trajectory, with good activation. That's enough.
Okay.
That's my way.
Get it. In the beginning, you said two exercises for one goal. Is it meant like in these four trainings, the person doesn't do more than two exercises to reach one goal?
Yes.
So like 4 days in a week, I train one on pull-ups, for example, and there are only two accessory exercises for the one on pull-up plus the one on pull-up practice.
It depends on the phase where you are.
Mm-hmm.
If you are far away from high intensity, you can perform more work because intensity is low and you can recover easier. Mm-hmm. The recovery is easy, basically. Okay. You can recover easily. Okay. When you move to high intensity, the stress, the fatigue on the central nervous system is very high. So you don't have a spot for something that potentially can increase the stress. So as you move in the range 80, 90%, you have to reduce. And in the most of the cases, perform always and only the specific movement. One accessory, not too much. When you are maybe in the phase from 80 to 70 or 70 to 60, you can have one more exercise for the scapular depression. You can have more archer. You can have more general pulling movement like two-arm pull-up, and you have something lying for the bicep, and then you can have something for the core. So there is a time where you can do more. There is a time where you need to focus on the specific movement.
Okay. Get it. Let's talk about some general advice, some general things that you're a big fan of. You said like weights is one thing that you don't like too much to achieve the athlete's goals. But for example, what's your opinion on rings training? Is it helpful? There are also like different opinions on that.
Okay, rings training is very helpful if you want to become strong on rings. Because for sure there is a big problem that is the instability factor. Okay. The instability factor takes the biggest part of the energy. Okay. When you become proficient of holding the rings together, all the things become really easy. Okay. But it takes time. Another problem of the rings is that they stress a lot the shoulder and the rotator cuff. So if you don't have a good balance in the shoulder, you risk to injure yourself, especially in the long head of the bicep or the subscapularis or teres minor or supraspinatus or maybe your sternum, especially if you approach the rings when is not the time, when it's too early for you. Okay. So if you want to be strong on the rings, you should work with them carefully because the amount of stress on the joints and on the connective tissues is definitely higher compared to the stable support, like, for example, floor or the P-bars. Another problem is the stress on the bicep and on the elbows. So if you have some planes of performing cross, or planches or Maltese work, you should consider the amount of stress on the bicep. So it can adapt, but it can take a lot of time. Okay. For me personally, I remember it was 2016 when I've done the first Iron Cross on the rings. One of my problem is that rings was causing to me a restriction in the joint, in the connective tissue of the joint, at the point where I wasn't able to bend my elbows more than that. Okay. Every time I was trying to squeeze my forearm, I had a sensation of cramps, but it wasn't cramp. Okay. It's very strange. It's very strange. Simply, I have solved it by reducing the volume on rings and increasing the flexibility of joint tissues. Okay. So rings are funny. There is the correct moment to introduce them in your training.
Okay. Other tools that you're a big fan of, that like somebody should have in their workout?
Well, there are some period during the year where I spend 2 or 3 weeks working on high repetition. Like, for example, something lying between 20 repetition and from week to week down to 12 to failure, okay? With slow eccentric and generally speaking, slow movement, because in this way, we can increase the total amount of tension in a set. We can produce a situation where tendons can adapt easily. So also Jack, every 12 weeks, he performs 3 weeks of anatomical adaptations so that I can prepare his joints for the future cycle. And in this way, he can hold more intensity, more volume, time over time. So this is something that I'm constantly doing with more advanced athletes. And there are many ways to do that. For example, in the one-arm pull-up, if you are training with the pulley system, you can stay something like in between 50 and 60% and perform one-arm pull-up for 15, 20 repetition. And week over week, increasing a bit the intensity and moving to 15 repetition and then 12 repetition in the third week. In the case, for example, of an isometric hold, I continue to increase the number of the maximum seconds at the point where maybe one of my athletes can hold an isometric position for 30 seconds. If he can, he is training something like in between 60-65%, and he stays with these times for 1 month. And in this way, he can adapt. And then we can pass in the next progression. Or we can add some weight, maybe 2 kilograms weight at the waist, so that we can make the position harder. And then when we can take off the weight, basically the body weight isometric position is definitely easier. So really there are tons of strategies that you can use in order to improve your strength, basic strength or specific strength. It depends on you. It depends on logistics. So if you have, for example, loop bands, or you have only the pulley system, or you don't have a high bar, you have only low parallel bar, and you can make some decisions basing on what you have at the moment. This for sure. You can increase your strength and, for example, the number of repetition of one exercise in two ways. You can compensate repetition or you can increase the 1RM. Are you following me? So I can make an example. I can increase the number of 1RM pull-up by increasing my best weighted 1RM pull-up. If I can do 1RM pull-up with 10 kilograms more, maybe I can do 7 1RM pull-up with only my own body weight. But I can also reach the same repetition if I start with a number of maximum repetition equals to 3 by programming with the idea of increasing repetition. So for example, I can do only 3 repetition of 1RM pull-up. I take my 3 weeks of training. I begin with 6 set of 1, and then in the second week I move to 3 set of 2, and then in the following week 4th set of 2, and then in the fourth week I'm going to test. Maybe my maximum number of reps is now 4. Then in the next cycle I can begin with 4 set of 2, then 5 set of 2, then 3 set of 3, and then I test, and probably my 4 reps are faster than before. So for sure I'm not as the previous month, I'm stronger, so I can move from 3 set of 3 on 4 set of 3, then 5 set of 3, then I test and maybe I can do 5. So is a accumulating repetition process. So I think that we have these two big situation or strategies, that is basically improving your maximal strength or the accumulation of the repetition time over time.
Okay. And is this a way of programming also the way to avoid a plateau and to stagnate with your own performance?
Usually I analyze the program and I must understand why there is a point where I cannot move forward. Let me explain why training sometimes is more complex than what we think. If I have an athlete, which basically is so explosive, for example, in dynamic muscle up or 1RM pull up, probably this athlete has more fast twitch fiber. So I can expect from him to move more and reach more than 20 seconds in isometric hold, because he is not made to do that. And after 2 1-month cycles where I can see that he is not improving, probably I should make this reflection. Okay, so consider also the genetic, but you can understand something more about genetic only by training your student time over time. And for example, if I have a student that responds less to higher repetition and higher seconds, I prefer to hold in the program always less repetition and less seconds. And I use more progression so that the gap between the next progression and the one that we have already mastered is a bit less. There is more carryover between the two progressions. And with the students, I tend to stay in a higher intensity range. I'm not used to move in the 75 or 70% of intensity. Okay, so did you understand?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay, so there are so many things you talked about that are important and that you accumulated with your knowledge and with your experience during the years. And in calisthenics, I would say it's still quite unusual. I feel that Italy is one country where it's already quite far advanced, but like it's quite unusual still for calisthenics athletes to have a coach. And there are only like a few athletes, that's at least my feeling, that say, yeah, it makes sense for me, or like I invest into a coach. So I think this interview already shows a lot of the reasons why it makes sense to have like an experienced partner at your side during your workout, like you. But maybe you can explain more in your words. Why do you think it makes sense to have a coach in calisthenics to reach the goals?
Well, I have a coach. Okay, so it's strange to say, but 3 years old, I was 90 kilograms. Okay.
Three years ago. Okay.
Sorry, I was 90 kilograms. I spent sometimes finding a way for improve by myself. And basically I was overtrained. So I remember there was a period where I wasn't able to sleep. 2 hours a night, something like that. I always was something like that, always. Rolling in my bed, no sleep. So at some point, you need to make some decisions. So I found my coach who helped me for the body recomposition. So I have improved my body recomposition, and basically I learned something more about training. I think that having a coach, it's a good opportunity to also learn something different from our perspective. Okay. Because I have an experience, and another coach maybe has a different experience compared to mine. But all coaches share the same logic if they have results. So I one of the few coaches in Italy that on his own profile pushes his students. I'm not fun to push myself. I'm not a strong athlete now. Why? Because I'm old. And I have to spend time to work. Okay. So my idea is that also an athlete can be a good coach if he or she was coached too. Because he or she can understand ideas, logic. He or she was exposed to some structure, some programs, and so on. I think that all the coaches should have a basic knowledge about strength training. That means understanding functional anatomy. Functional anatomy is necessary if you want to choose an exercise. There are some people with still want to split exercise on pushing and pulling. This does not make any sense. So I'm going to ask you, for example, the one arm pull up is pulling or pushing? So question is because there is a trap.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you think about pulling in this part, also your chest is working. You can feel the chest works. And the chest is a pushing muscle. So the one arm pull up is a pushing movement. No, we should consider the range of motion. Pulling is a shoulder extension. So if I want to split the exercise on the correct family, and I want to choose exercise for my program, I should understand the functional anatomy. If I want to program, I should understand the concept of intensity. How much time can I hold high intensity? How can I perform a deload? How much can increase the volume week over week? And so on. How can I reduce fatigue? Do I have signs about overreaching? How can I avoid overreaching? Can I eat better? Can I sleep better? And so on. So there is really a mix of concepts that one coach should know. Of course, there are always coaches that have students without knowing too much about science, for sure. But I train so many different people that I need to understand and to know more. I have to say that past the 40 years, you have more probability of tearing the rotator cuff for the bicep tendon. So if I have people, a person, a student who is 50 years old, I must know what he can do and what he cannot do. Because I'm playing with the life of the person. Okay. If I train the person at the point where he has an injury, I'm affecting his life. And what about if he's working with the arm all the days? A coach should consider also that. It's not only about training. It's also having in your hands the life of a person. That's also coaching. I have only a few number of really, really athletes. And I don't have students who train 8 hours a day. All of them have a work. They work 8 hours a day in the industry. They work driving a car. They work in the supermarket. They work as an engineer in front of the desk or the computer. You need to consider everything. So it's not easy from a point of view being a coach.
And who is the like for all the listeners now who are listening this, and maybe some of them want to take the next level in their workouts, who is the right person to work with you? What's important for you if you take on a new client?
Okay, I think that they can read this one, which is periodization training for sport. Okay. I don't know if you know this book.
Yeah, okay. We will put the link in the description.
Okay, so you don't have to read the book and think about finding training program here. Here you can find logic. Here you can understand how you can structure a macro cycle, a single unit of training, a single week, how to deload, how to increase your 1RM, how to use eccentrics, and so on. And then the biggest problem here is translating everything for the body weight world. That is, from my perspective, a little bit more complex.
Okay, and who is the right client for you? So to the people listening, somebody is interested in working with you. What's important for you if you take a new client?
Basically, there is no prerequisites. So if you want to improve and if you want to learn, I do not make miracles. Okay. If you have problems and if you want to solve it, I'm open-minded. Okay. I have to admit that a biggest part of my clients already have injuries. So the biggest part is still recovering from injury. So when they have tried it again, and they are at the point where they cannot train, sometimes they come to me. I want to give you an example. I have started coaching with a guy on the previous week, and he is 22 years old, and he has a very powerful genetics. So think about that. He was really able to perform 7 one-arm pull-up, but he told me, I don't want to get another injury. I want to train, nothing more. I don't want to hurt myself, no more. Okay, so I still work with who wants performance, but he must understand that if he or she is in the case, in the situation, in the moment where he can push, we are going to push. But if I ask you to show me what you can do, it should be perfect. So I don't trust words. Facts, always. And that's the way in my profile, there are only my students. There are facts. Show facts, nothing more. Okay, sometimes I understand that athletes don't search a coach because they already discovered to have a good genetics. Okay, and if you are in this case, probably you don't feel the necessity of searching a guide. Okay, because you see that what you are doing is working. And I think as an athlete, if what I'm doing works, why do I need someone who tells me what I have to do? Because what I'm doing is working. And it works because I have good genetics. So it works no matter what I'm doing. It is because I have a good genetics. But maybe you have to perform a question. I'm having results with my genetics and probably a bad program. What about having a coach with a good program and my genetics? So I don't know if Giacomo Vinati, Jack, now is expressing his real genetics. But when he comes to me, it was because he wasn't able to progress. Also, Francesco Castellini, the guy who is able to do the one-arm pull-up with 15 kilograms, he was a really strong. I mean, 3-4 one-arm pull-ups on each side. But he wasn't able to progress. Also, in the planche, 6-7 seconds. So he worked with me 2 months, 20 seconds planche. So good genetics, for sure. Good genetics works. Good genetics with good training programs works better. So I remember when I was talking with the coach of Yuri Kiki, Bruno Franceschetti, and he told me that Yuri really was a genius in his field, in the sport, in gymnastics. But sometimes people say perseverance can beat genetics. Okay, so this is correct only if the people with good genetic is as a bad training approach. Mm-hmm. If you are training in a good way, genetics always win. Always win.
Yeah, kind of demotivating for the people who don't have the good genetics, but
I'm not a person who say if you have a bad genetics, don't train. You don't know what is your genetics. You have to try. I usually say there is a sort of invisible genetics. that you have not possibly to cut your arms in half and see how many fibers you have in the muscles, or analyze how many motor units you have in your brain. So you have to try. Why not? I'm not a fan of try for 1 month, and then if you don't have results, take the calisthenic activity and put them in the angle, in the shadow. Now, try. And if you think that the genetics is a limiting factor, maybe think that there could be a coach with good experience that can take your genetic out of your body. So when I was 90 kilograms, I thought that my genetics was really, really bad. Now I'm thinking in another way, for sure.
By the way, how tall are you?
1 meter and 70 centimeters.
Okay.
So I'm short.
So 90 kg is a lot. Yeah. Okay. And like how when you talk right now about you as an athlete, how is it today to be a coach and an athlete? Is it are you still like performing that you're happy with your performance, or is it difficult for you?
I had to accept that I cannot train like before. Before, I think that there was a period where I was able to train 5 hours in a day. But I was studying at university, so there was a lot of time. The time is the problem, because in the strength world, you perform a set, then you rest. Then you perform a set, then you rest 3 or 4 minutes. So if you perform 15 sets, you have at least more than 1 hour of rest. And then I need to perform some mobility so that I can balance my shoulder and my posture. And maybe I want to try some technical movement, like when I was training one arm handstand. And it takes really a lot of time, because you need to practice the one arm handstand for sure more than a planche, for sure, because there is a very big technical component. And so basically is that now I have less time. So I have only 1 or 2 goals that are my future goals. Okay, now, for example, improving the number of one-arm pull-up, or learning the back lever muscle-ups. But I don't have really a date with the time. I'm not in a hurry, for sure. Sometimes I think that with this this body fat percentage, I am in an optimal situation to push. But I don't have too much time, because I have to work. Maybe you have a family, and you have, if you are a single professional worker, you have to adjust tons of aspects of your life. I have students, I have online coaching. Sometimes I have some coaching course in the weekend, not in this period, but it's a matter of time. Or I think that in September, everything is going to move back in a normal situation. So probably in the weekend, I'm going to coach somewhere in Italy or somewhere in England in the next year. So time is the big problem. For sure, I'm training definitely better now than when I was an athlete. 100% yes. I did a lot of stupid things. I can remember that. I had, for example, a bicep tendonitis. I wasn't able to lift a cup of tea without feeling pain. So it took about 1 year to heal completely. And then a very long recovery process. So I remember in this period, there was Coach Sommer who told me, stop because you are going to hurt. And I stopped. I was lucky.
Oh. You said the body percentage would be perfect to push, or like, can you explain that deeper, what you meant with that?
But calisthenics is a matter of a relative strength. So it's a matter of how much power you can develop compared to your body weight. So the fat is a tissue without any utility because it cannot produce strength. Okay. So it's not the case. Some of the strongest gymnasts have also a low body fat, especially in competition. So the less tissue that basically does not produce strength you have to carry on yourself, the better it is. So the bad thing for me is that the rest of the fat is in the lower limbs. So that if I have to perform planches, I still have body fat in the lower limbs. And that's genetic.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And ideally, holding your body fat in between 8 and 10% is the optimal situation. Because if the body fat is too low, you tend to need the more time to recover from the fatigue. If the bad body fat is too high, it can be a problem if you have to move your body. Okay, it is nothing more simple than that. So you can consider to cycle period where you have a low body fat and period where you have a little more of body fat, and simply make some adjustments. Like, for example, I have to measure, for example, how many centimeters I'm gaining around my belly button, and see how my skills, how I'm going into my skills. So, for example, I gain 4 centimeters, my planche is going down. So maybe only with 2 centimeters, I can still improve or holding my performance. So I know that if I want to gain weight, maybe because I want to put some functional hypertrophy, my limit, my edge should be 2 centimeters around my belly button. And then maybe in a period of competition, we can make a fast body recomposition. I can lose some a point of fat percentage, reaching a better body composition, talking about tissues, and probably I can expect a better performance.
Interesting. And the Coke you just held into the camera, does it help you, the Coca-Cola?
sometimes. Of course, it's Coca-Cola with the zero sugar.
Okay.
That's the only Coca-Cola I drink in this period.
Okay. But do you focus on nutrition as well with your clients?
No, because it's a bit complex. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes happens that psychological situation should be managed, and you need to be trained to do that. So I don't want to say that I don't want to help people with the nutritional component, but I spent a lot of energy on what I'm doing in this moment, like programming and so on. Having more energy for supporting people on their nutrition is something that now I I cannot do. It's simply a matter of energy, nothing more.
Okay, but like to put it shortly, because we have to come to an end closely. Do you think nutrition is like an important factor? So do you sometimes have the situation that your programming should work well and it works well, but the client's nutrition is hindering or slowing down the process?
Yes. In fact, recently I've started to ask my students to write down in their program or send me every week their weight. Because if you are performing the same number of reps and seconds, but with 2 kilograms more, you are not the same of 1 month ago. You are doing the same work with 2 kilograms more. You are stronger than before. So sometimes happens, especially around Christmas. Around Christmas, people over the world gain weight. And this is a bad problem, of course. After this period, always I ask them to, okay, try slowly to move back to your normal weight, so that we can see if the weight was the problem, and if not, well, it's very simple. But I think in terms of performance, weight can play a big role. I remember when Andre La Rosa won the International Burning Cup, he was in a perfect shape. Really, really. I never seen him with the shape like that before. Never. Really, he was perfect. Low body fat, energy. So probably he had a recovery diet. In this way, you can arrive to the competition with low body fat, but you are full of energy, because all your store are completely full. There is no space for more sugar in your blood. And he won.
True. Great. Alessandro, we are slowly coming to an end. We always have some quick questions, quick answers at the end. What's your favorite food?
Pizza.
Pizza.
Yeah, pizza. Pizza. Finally. And the meat of the beef. So okay. I don't. Have you ever been in Italy?
No.
Okay, you can eat. There is a specific piece of the beef that is the Fiorentina. Mm-hmm. You can eat it in Florence. Okay. And it's delicious if you like the meat.
Wow.
For sure.
Nice. Yeah. Like usually I ask the question, pizza or burger? And not all, but most of the Italians that I asked until now, they all said burger. So I'm happy that I finally have an Italian who is pizza. Yeah. Nice. Are you a dog or a cat person?
Dog. I had 3 dogs. Wow. So the last one is a black German Shepherd.
Wow.
It's not from Belgium. I know there is some Shepherd also in the Belgium, which are blacks. But my one is a black German Shepherd. Great. They are not pretty famous. Mm-hmm. They have a very strong character, and they are usually introduced into special forces.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so he's a good dog.
Interesting. Even me as a German, I didn't know that there are black German Shepherds. I just of course I know the German Shepherds, but not the black ones. Nice. What athletes inspire you?
Ziolus. He's a monster, and I think that another one from Italy is Maieli. Mm-hmm. So Emanuele Maieli. And another one, remember his name. He's really famous. Ortiz.
Eric Ortiz, yes.
He's not human. Really, he is still surprising me year over year. he's an alien from my point of view, really.
Do you have a favorite book?
I have to admit that I do not read too much. Okay.
When you just, I have some... you just buy the books and put them in the shelf behind you, yes. So you look smart.
All of them are science book.
It's also a book.
Yes. So when I have some free time, I tend to spend some time reading something in a field that for me is new. For example, I mean marketing outside the fitness world, or something concerned with hormones, the physiological aspect of an athlete, something like that. I don't have preferences. Okay. Or maybe some books in biologic field or genetic or something like that.
Okay. The best calisthenics event you've visited?
I am a judge in the International Barnegat Cup here in Italy. And I'm a judge since 2014. So I moved around Italy. But my idea is soon or later visit the event it's not Svizzera, in Colonia. I don't
World of Bar Heroes, the yes. FIBO. Yeah.
Yes, the FIBO. Yes, the FIBO.
Nice.
I know that the staff of Barnegat moved to FIBO 1 year. And I know that Andrea La Rosa moved to FIBO, also Vicky Santoro, but I have never the possibility. But
yeah, that was back in the days. Like I think La Rosa was there. I think it was 2014 or 15, one of these 2 years. Something but like back then it was a different organizer. Like today we're also a part in that, but like the organization is the company Barsflex. They are like organizing the World of Bar Heroes tournament, and this is like it's a big thing. So I'm happy to welcome you there, and I'm maybe sure you not. Will I'm sure you will
yes,
enjoy
for
it
sure. For sure.
Awesome. Last question. What's your message to the calisthenics community?
don't rush in the training, and train smarter, not more. Simply.
Okay.
Because we need to train for all our life, not stopping. In the next 2 years, simply this, and enjoy the process.
Nice. How can people get in touch with you? Where do they find you? How can they contact you about coaching?
Well, I have an Instagram profile, Alessandro Mainente, where you can see a message and I can write you back. I have a site with a really a tons of contents, and also a YouTube channel with 25,000 subscribers, but wow. Everything is in Italian. So I'm waiting someone who has who maybe have some intention of writing down the subtitles, but it's really a long process. So I'm thinking about doing that in the nearly future, but not now, for sure, not now. So use as preference my Instagram profile.
Awesome. Alessandro, big thank you. It was an extremely interesting episode. So much to think about, so much that I wrote down, but I think it's really an interview that I have to listen to again to get all the advice and all the input. big thank you. It was extremely, extremely interesting and a big pleasure for me. Thanks that you took the time. And yeah, thanks to everyone listening to this till the end. And before Alessandro, you can say goodbye. I want to say thank you, as I said, for listening. 1.5 hours interview. Big thank you if you stuck with us till the end. If you have any future questions for Alessandro, maybe we make a second episode. Maybe if you have a lot of questions in the description, just leave them and we will see if there is like in the next year, whenever a possibility to make a second episode. Who knows? So yeah, give it a thumbs up. It helps a lot. And apart from that, Alessandro, you have the last words.
Thank you, Phil, for this opportunity. I hope that my English was enough good to understand the concept or at least something. Okay. And I hope that my idea, my way of thinking about training can be something good for your training, for programming, for understanding, for learning, for everything, basically. And you can for sure read the books, for example, the one that I have already shown. And I'm pretty sure that you can understand with the time everything I have already said for 1 hour and a half.
Awesome. Then thanks again and bye-bye to everyone.